Millions of American students lack access to the technology they need to succeed in the digital world. Verizon Innovative Learning has helped over 1 million kids get free tech education, and they'll help 2 million more by 2021. Learn more at verizoninnovativelearning.com/WS1.
This is Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos, reporting from the newsroom in New York. Here to talk about a very unique take on artificial intelligence is the billionaire CEO of an AI startup with a very unique story. And he's tackling a very unique problem with his startup. I'm speaking, of course, of the insufferable yet unavoidable agony of ever having to call customer service. Ever. The creator of Invisalign and the CEO of AI startup Affinity says, enough with the hype. Artificial intelligence needs to bring more humans back into the equation. That's after these tech headlines. The UK's privacy watchdog fined Facebook $645,000 for allowing illicit access to users' data by political data firm Cambridge Analytica. The fine is but a pittance for Facebook, less than an 80th of its daily profit in the second quarter. But it is the first legal slap that Facebook has faced in a case that led to congressional and parliamentary hearings on both sides of the Atlantic. The fine, which is the maximum allowed under the UK's old privacy law, is also a warning for tech companies like Facebook. And under the European Union's new GDPR privacy law, the UK can now issue fines that rise to a maximum of 4% of a company's annual worldwide revenue. In Facebook's case, that's $1.6 billion. Nokia is starting to benefit from the shift to 5G technology. But the company says it will cut thousands of jobs to prepare itself for a new era. The industry has been waiting for years for cellular carriers to roll out 5G, a super fast generation of wireless networks, and Nokia said adoption in the U.S. was already helping it boost sales. However, the company said it still needed to cut costs to boost profitability and launched a major restructuring program. Nokia also said the program will cost the company roughly $1 billion by the end of 2020. And heard on the streets, Dan Gallagher says Apple's cheaper iPhone can still pay off. The iPhone XR is expected to be the biggest seller of this year's rollout. And among this year's crop of new iPhones, reviewers seem unanimous that less expensive is the better option. Fortunately for Apple, cheaper can still be highly profitable. Apple introduced the iPhone XR last month alongside two other new iPhone models, but the company tried a new approach this year. It launched the more expensive of the new phones first. The iPhone XS and XS Max models went on sale in late September, just before the end of Apple's 2018 fiscal year. All three offer mostly the same advancements in terms of processor speed and features such as Face ID. For more, including in-depth reviews on all the new models, head to wsj.com/tech. Coming up, how one billionaire CEO is using one of life's most hated interactions to push through a very unique take on AI. Zia Chisti, CEO of startup Affinity, and if you're keeping score, the creator of Invisalign, he's now shifting gears and working on improving customer call centers. Zia Chisti, welcome to the podcast studio. How's that?
Ah, perfect.
Got it. This isn't my first try at this or anything. Well, first of all, welcome to the studio. We're really excited to have you here. Invisalign, you know, everyone knows it. It was quite a breakthrough, but it was a very different tech era. So I just wonder, how does spearheading tech in this day and age differ from doing it back then, first and foremost?
I think there's more similarities than differences. I would start with that.
So okay.
There are many common themes. You've got to build a great team. You've got a powerful technology that's scalable. You've got to raise financing. So all those things are true. In terms of differences, compute power is way up. So the miracles that we had to work back in the late 90s, now are really rather commonplace in as much as you have much faster processors. If there was then an acceptance of the startup culture, now it's a big theme in the U.S. economy. So the notion of building a big company from scratch is much more widely accepted now than it was back then. And evidence of that is just the unicorn phenomenon, right? Back then, having a billion-dollar company pre-public was almost unheard of. Now it's rather commonplace. There's just less of an impression of unusualness that's associated with that outcome.
Affinity is so interesting because it tackles a very specific field of tech with call centers. And I think it's so relatable, the inescapable, unbearable part of life for most of us, right? First of all, thank you for helping us out. A change of gears, though. What made you decide to set your specific sights there? I'm curious.
Well, a lot of that has to do with my personal journey. So when I left Align Technology back in 2002, I founded a private equity firm called TRG. The firm's mandates was to invest in business process outsourcing companies and technologies that support those companies. So we had a call center in our portfolio of assets, and we looked at how we might optimize it, and we concluded that the most powerful single thing that we could do was change how calls flowed in that environment, which consumers spoke to which agents. And that was the genesis of our company, Affinity, which blossomed in its own right.
I want to talk a little bit more about your process, because often when companies utilize AI, you see the focus shifting away from the human element. You have an opposite approach. How have you found that to be a key strategy?
Well, first of all, this whole AI thing is really overblown. If you actually look at the number of jobs that have replaced AI to date, I imagine it's an extremely small percentage of the overall economy.
That's a good point.
It's just not as big as the popular hyperbole around AI would suggest. So I would discount the view that we're rapidly losing jobs at any pace. In terms of what we do, that's really actually the dominant use of AI, which is simply pattern recognition, often in support of humans. And any time that you can give humans tools that improve their efficiency, you actually increase demand for those humans. So
Right. We
look at it as very different. We don't think this is extraordinary or unusual or counter to the major themes of AI. It's just what we do. We enhance how humans operate, and that increases the demand for humans, and that's good for the employment.
And as any tech entrepreneur knows, and as you know, it takes a certain drive to stay in the game, especially as you have for so long. You have a very unique story that I'd love for you to share with listeners, and I wonder how your story, as a Pakistani American, how that's impacted how you do business and how you make your way around this, this very unique world.
So it's humorous. When I first arrived in the United States after 14 years of being really out of the country, it was quite a culture shock. I came in 1988 to go to college, and the last time I was really, really here was when I was 2 years old in 1973. So,
wow.
So it was a very big adjustment curve associated with culture.
Yeah.
But having said that, the United States is such an amazing place to start a business. This almost sounds a little bit flag-waving, but it really is. I mean, the college education that I got, I got a degree in economics and computer science, set me up really well for what proved to be a revolution in the economy that was really oriented around those two disciplines. So from there, I went to Morgan Stanley and I learned about finance. That was a very, very powerful experience for the rest of my life. I could look at companies in the way that investors look at companies, so you can construct a narrative and a business that really appeals. And then in 1997, I graduated from business school, and that was really the heart of the tech boom. The internet boom was happening right about then.
Right.
And that gave me the courage and inspiration to become an entrepreneur. So I think it is a uniquely American story. I don't think this would have happened if I had grown up in Pakistan or really anywhere else in the world.
Sure. So having said that, what's next for Affinity, and how do you see Affinity taking the next steps towards your goal of saving us all from call center?
we will make the experience more pleasant, to be sure. Look, so this goes back to our original few words, Tanya. I'm just not a believer in the current AI boom.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's a massive amount of overhype around it. I don't think that the hyperbole is substantiated by what is true progress on the ground. I think people confuse the increase in computational capacity associated with Moore's law with some kind of algorithmic improvement over time. We've been doing basically the same things in, quote, AI, unquote, for the last 30, 40, 50 years. So there's nothing really new or breakthrough here. We may have slightly contrarian opinions on that, but I think there's a lot of overkill in the market in terms of supposition around power and ability to replace humans. So I'd like to abstract away what we do from the AI bandwagon, which I think, like many of these, is going to boom and bust, and we'd rather be clear of that association. From our point of view, AI is just a tool. It allows us to analyze a large amount of data and find patterns in data that's useful in a commercial context. Whether you call that AI or pattern recognition or machine learning or just algorithms, it doesn't really matter. So when you abstract away that nomenclature around the industry, what we're really about is solving how people interact with each other, figuring out what behaviors are for an enterprise's customers, figuring out what behaviors are for an enterprise's employees, and then finding ways to bring them together in a patterned way that improves an enterprise's performance. And That's very powerful. It makes our clients hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars a year. And that's where we'd like to focus, which is the commercial power of what we do as opposed to being momentarily associated with a bit of a solar flare of a trend in the equity markets.
Really great perspective. For more on Affinity and Ziad's story, please head to WSJ.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tanya.
And that is Tech News Briefing, reporting from the newsroom in New York. I'm Tanya Bustos. Thanks for listening.